Smooth turds roasting on an open fire. Jackass nipping at your nose. Hello, everybody. It's Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, day after Christmas, wherever you are, whatever time it is. It's a holiday somewhere, and here at TF Metals Report, we have a holiday tradition. Anytime we have a lengthy market downtime, there's no better time than to invite in the one and only Jackass himself, Jim Willie. And so here it is. It is Christmas week, and we got some Jackass to nip at our nose. Jim, welcome back to Turdville.
It's been a while, Turd. I've missed you, and I understand you've come out of the closet recently, and you're going by the name of Craig, but you're still wearing that big hat.
I have that hat. Yes, I do. Though I've noticed, though, that it's not going to matter. I'm going to go home for Christmas, and my mother is still going to call me Turd. And that now, I think that damage is irreparable. I am what I am, Jim. There's nothing I can do about it now. But you are the Jackass. Everybody knows that, and everybody loves and appreciates your work. As we get started, tell everybody a little bit about the hat trick letter and where they can find you on the internet.
Well, to begin with, I want people to know that the Jackass was a loving name that my mother gave to me when I was a little kid.
God bless her.
Get down here, you Jackass! I can't tell you how many hundred times I heard that phrase.
That's awesome.
Will you stop misbehaving, you Jackass? Okay, so when I called myself the Golden Jackass and had the website name, my mother chuckled for 20 minutes and wet herself.
I may just be doing that right now.
Yeah. No, okay. So anyway, believe it or not, this April, May will be the 10th anniversary. So I'm closing out 9 full years and almost 10 full ones coming up now. This is amazing. This is just amazing. 117 issues. And I remember when I met Kurt Rickenbacker back in August of 2003 before the newsletter, we were looking at his old newsletters and he gave me a big pile of them. And And the number, it was issue number 286. I said, Kurt, 286? He said, yeah, it's been over 20 years, Jim. This is amazing. I never thought it would be for more than a year or so. But anyway, you can find the newsletter on goldenjackass.com, www.goldenjackass.com. No periods, hyphens, or anything in the middle there, just Golden Jackass. We got 2 reports per month. One is called the Money War Report. It's higher level. It is about the battle and war over money and the control of the dollar and the perpetuation of the dollar and their desire to keep their ability for owning the printing press and printing themselves trillion-dollar paychecks. Mm-hmm. There's a war over that. And the U.S. military – the U.S. military is finally being recognized as the principal defender of the dollar.
Yeah.
And I think the Iran talks brought that out. The second report that is now every single month is the Golden Currency Report. And I get into a lot of details, ground level, like movement in India, intermediary action by Turkey, central bank actions on how much money they print, the currency wars, the competitive devaluations by central banks, the mint demand for coins, a lot of things. So here we are, and just have another good time. I got to admit that this is wearing me down month after month. And gosh, I thought when I started this by 2009 and 2010, we're going to have a collapse of the treasury bond and gold will reign supreme. But, you know, there's no end to what these people can do, because they've got the military at their disposal, they've got the regulators at their disposal, they got the Exchange Stabilization Fund and the Treasury Department at their disposal, they've got rigging of the COMEX and LBMA at their disposal, they got all kinds of military pressures. I mean, I remember way back in, I think it was 05 or 06, I had made a flip comment to someone that you know, they got the U.S. military back in the dollar when you really get down to it. And he said, you really think so? I said, yeah. South Korea just announced, their central bank announced that they were going to diversify away from the treasury bonds a little more. And the next thing you know, I said to the guy, the next thing you know, the U.S. Navy is off their shore, Seoul, Korea, doing exercises. And now it's becoming much more common knowledge. Well, of course, but very few people. If I had to guess among the American population, I'd say that it's under 2%, definitely under 5% of the American population that understands that Iran's violation in the last 2 years was selling oil and gas outside the dollar.
Right, right.
Not nuclear. The nuclear story is for freaking morons.
Well, let's go there for a second, Jim, because, well, we got to start somewhere. And that's a great place to start because, it like you said, I think very few members of just the general great unwashed would even bother to connect those dots. It's like written in that supposed agreement, you know, that I guess there's some question now whether there's an agreement there or not. But nonetheless, written in there was this language that Iran will not transact things in gold anymore. Well, what does that have to do? I thought this was about, you know, whether they're not going to build a nuclear bomb. Well, what's that about? And you can clearly, I mean, it's not a very long walk to connect those dots to see that this sudden desire to lift the sanctions and everything else was a dollar, petrodollar defense strategy, was it not?
Oh, gosh, I could go on for 10 minutes on the Iran talk.
I suppose so.
But no, seriously, I'm not joking
around.
No, this,
I understand.
It's very serious stuff. I've got a new name. It's a more accurate name for the Iran talks. It was the Petrodollar Surrender Summit with strategic arms limitation talks attached to it.
Right.
It's the death of the petrodollar, which will bring the death of the U.S. dollar and force a split. But the Iran talks were really about who has the right to nuke another country over what financial principle. That's what it was all about. And you know, I just giggle. I like giggling when I watch, you know, CNBC and Bloomberg News. I giggle a lot. I'm like a little girl.
Oh, I do the same. I just sit there and shake my head and just chuckle to myself.
Yeah. Well, when we got the first inkling of the Iran talks, I read that Iran agreed not to use the dollar anymore. I'm sorry, to debase all of their transactions in the dollar anymore. I just laughed and I said, oh, more problem for the morons.
Yeah.
But here's what I think might have happened regarding that specific agreement line. That clause might have been agreed to by Iran where they said, we will denominate the sale in dollars for reporting purposes, but all the settlement will be done outside the dollar.
Yeah. Yeah.
In other words, we're going to placate you freaking morons. And you dirty devil bankers.
Yeah.
And we'll say whatever you want, but we'll do what we want.
Right. We'll let you keep your little illusion going.
Fine. Exactly. Exactly.
You know, and what's interesting are, you know, the unintended or intended consequences of, you know, what appears to be, at least on the surface as it's reported, an enemy of Saudi Arabia, which you would think would be the linchpin of the petrodollar. But by negotiating, you know, out of the left side of your mouth, you're pissing off the Saudis out of the right side of your mouth and driving them into the arms of the Chinese and the Russians, are they not? I mean, isn't that just further dissolving the whole petrodollar system or weakening it?
It is. I got two things to comment that are really important on this issue regarding Iran. The first is what Saudi was to the petrodollar, Iran will be to the petro-yuan.
Okay, yeah.
And secondly, the natural gas co-op is a new cartel forming, and it's led by Gazprom and Russia. It's going to eclipse OPEC. OPEC is to the petrodollar what Gazprom and the net gas co-op will be to the petro-yuan.
Okay.
The Saudis had their emphasis pointing west. Their directors are more in London than they were in the United States, but they are certainly in both.
Sure.
The focus in the Persian Gulf is going to turn now to Iran, and the emphasis will be on the pipelines, the gas pipelines. I honestly think that we're going to see in the next year the Saudis painted as terrorists and Iran painted as the new, not peacekeepers, but the linchpin for global stability.
Yeah.
The Saudis are already on the outs. And I got to take a look at closer. I mean, you got to look closely at this Arab Spring bullshit that Obama seems to promote. I believe it was part of a plan to allow things to go sour with the Saudis. And I don't want to get into a real weird geopolitical Obama discourse here. But I think there are a lot of things going on that are very well planned, including a tremendous drain of gold from London and Switzerland to China.
Right, right.
When they talk about – when I read about and when they talk about China's got 1,054 tons of gold in their central bank, again, I giggle like a little girl because I've been told by The Voice that their tonnage is over 15,000.
Their total?
Total.
Oh, I think that's eminently believable. I mean, not only just doing the math of what we see importing – through Hong Kong and everything else. But God only knows how much they actually mine themselves.
Oh, that's small. That's 200, okay. 200 tons a year. So, you know, in 5 years, you got 1,000 tons. That's a drop in the bucket compared to 1,000 tons per month going from London to Beijing, 1,000 tons a month. These are improperly allocated gold accounts from legacy Chinese gold for probably a couple of centuries.
And it's all flowing to the east.
It's all being reversed because, and this I got, you know, I didn't get it directly from, you know, hey, mein Herr, please tell me, how are these deals all worked out? Instead, it was more like, well, here's a question. It went unanswered. 3 weeks later, here's another question, different angle. I got a hint back. And then finally, after about 6 months, it became quite clear. And he didn't go on and say, you know, Jim, let me explain it to you and do so in 3 or 4 minutes. It came out as, you read this correctly. Well, what did I read correctly? I said to him, these are allocated old gold accounts from ancient Chinese wealthy families that were improperly used by the London bankers regarding sovereign debt in Europe and other derivatives related to futures and God knows what. Improperly used gold set up as margin on heavily leveraged accounts that held the Western system together financially. And when it all went bad, they did not have the right, the London bankers, that is, to use some dollar swap facility and just pay it all off. Their margin, their extra margin. No, they had to pay in like kind of the margin. Margin was posted in gold. Margin had to be fixed in gold. So tremendous stuff is going on. And I got a message from him in late October. He said the 1,000 tons per month never stopped, because he told me that in April, May, June, and July of 2012, 4,000 metric tons were shipped, 1,000 tons a month. Well, naturally, being a jackass and being a persistent little SOB, in October and September and August and July, no, not July, and Christmas time last year, I said, has that continued? That 1,000 a month, 1,000 tons a month? No answer. January, no answer. February, no answer. Then suddenly in October, here we are, a year later after I started pestering. He says it never stopped. And then he said, we're not using Brinks anymore. Oh, my goodness. So we got some very big things happening here, Turd, and this is the year. This is the year things really break wide open, and the U.S. and British are going to have a hard time holding it together. In fact, I'll go so far as to say is they're not going to try to hold things together much longer. They're going to try to exploit it, and they're going to try to join it. And you're seeing that with some tremendously important events regarding J.P. Morgan. And you've been intrepid following their flip of net short, huge gold, net long, rather large gold. And I timed that with something. I got to mention something. This is brought to my attention. It's almost nowhere in the news. It's the IRS fund commitment. Have you heard anything about this?
No. What's that about?
Okay. I had to start piecing things together, but several months ago, my friend and colleague, Rob Kirby, explained some details about the Exchange Stabilization Fund from the Treasury Department. You've heard of that, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, just think of USA Incorporated, you know, the macro picture of the United States.
Okay.
What's the biggest committed flow of funds on income to the United States government?
The biggest committed? Are you talking about quantitative easing or tax revenues?
No. Tax revenue. Okay. What's the committed source of funds?
Tax.
Income.
Okay. Tax revenues.
It's tax revenue. Okay. Now, I'm having to piece things together, but Rob Kirby and another colleague of mine and a couple of other ones, not The Voice. He doesn't join this. We're trying to piece this together because it seems rather clear that a commitment was made of the IRS funds, and the commitment was made to China. But it was not directly, oh, we're going to just hand over our Internal Revenue Service tax receipts to China. No, it backed up a very big derivative, set of derivatives, very, very big, multi-trillion dollar set of derivatives that China bought. And, you know, we tried to piece it together, and then I asked the question, gee, it sounds like the back end of the 1999 gold lease of the Mao Zedong era gold in exchange for the most favored trade status. I tell you, Turd, 5, 6, 7 years passed, and I'm scratching my head all those years. Why did the U.S. promise to give its industry or a core element of the industry to China? What? A low-cost solution? Are you kidding me?
Right.
Low-cost solution? How about a slow death from loss of legitimate income? You don't hand your industry to another country unless they give you something huge.
Yeah.
And they gave Wall Street a lot of gold, and by 07 they reneged on it. And we're beginning to believe that after 08, 09, and 10, when the U.S. economy did not recover, there was a default, not on the return of the gold to China. Well, of course that happened, but there was a different kind of default on the basis of this IRS derivative to China. Think of the IRS fund and the derivative to China as being a macro kind of mortgage bond.
Yeah, a revenue bond, yeah.
And it promises to deliver income against it.
Uh-huh.
Well, with the recession, you can talk about a recovery all you want, but now they're starting to call it the non-recovery recovery.
Right.
That's like, you know, I could get
jumbo shrimp. Another oxymoron.
Well, it'd be like the virgin next door who just had an abortion. I mean, come on. you got to get serious about this. So, all right, now piece more things, more events together. The recession was brutal. The IRS fund was defaulted onto China. And then suddenly we have a Mickey Mouse government shutdown. Hey, I got news for you. The shutdown was real. The shutdown was a default. And the shutdown was probably staged and ordered by China because we reneged on their IRS payments. All right. Then pieced together that Chase Plaza was sold to a Chinese property conglomerate for a paltry sum of $725 million. Hey, I got news for you. It's worth twice that. Why did they sell it on the cheap to Chinese property conglomerate?
Yeah, why?
Because it was a default.
I'm trying to follow along, Jim. That's a lot to chew on, my man.
Yeah, I know it is. We set up as part of the most favored nation status a big lease of gold and secured it with IRS funds. And after 2008-09, the economy did not recover. We defaulted on those bonds. China's pissed off. They order us to do a government shutdown and an exercise on the default. I called it a trial run on a default. Now I'm beginning to think it was an actual default. And then China says, screw you, we're going to buy the Federal Reserve, and we're going to start with J.P. Morgan.
Uh-huh. Hey, you know what? I can certainly see where those dots connect. All right, that again.
It'll become clearer in time, but the proof to me that raised my eyebrow, and I just kept saying, what the hell was that? $725 million for a five-building complex in South Manhattan that includes the headquarters and a giant gold vault, the largest private gold vault in the world, that's rumored to be connected to the Federal Reserve. I joked with a friend and said, sounds like they bought the Fed.
Well, yeah. Well, see, I just wrote about that this week because this has been bothering me for months as well. And you see that building being purchased. Again, someone says, well, it's a private China. There are no private Chinese companies. I mean, that's silly. I mean, that's the Chinese government essentially buying One Chase Manhattan Plaza, which Zero Hedge did the research and, you know, figured it out that at that same nine stories down in the ground, sub nine grade level, they have the largest gold vault in the world. Across the street, literally across the street at the same sub nine grade level, is the Federal Reserve's gold vault. And that guy on my site, Pining for the Fjords, has it made a famous, it's now famous image because it gets used by everybody, of Jamie Dimon and Bernanke with shopping carts kind of going back and forth.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, why would they have an interest in that building? And then we look at, and look at the amount of, apparently the explanation of this is that when we get these perfectly to three decimal point deposits of eligible gold into J.P. Morgan's account, where we get an exact perfect two metric tons or an exact perfect four metric tons, that those are kilo bars, Asian kilo bars. Well, why would Asian kilo bars, 20 metric tons, suddenly start showing up in J.P. Morgan's vault that's now about to be owned? Or, you know, I don't think the deal's closed yet, or now is owned for all intents and purposes by the Chinese. I mean, there's a lot.
Kurt, it'll take a year or two just to complete that transaction.
Sure, but in the process, it's all heading in a direction. And you know, I guess Jim, at this point, let me. We've been talking now for a while, but I want to kind of let me just kind of steer off in a different direction, I guess, in a sense, because. For everybody listening, yeah, we like to have Jim on anytime there's a holiday. It's kind of a tradition, I guess, now. But in this instance, it's the end of the year. And, you know, you always sit back and kind of take stock of what has happened, you know, whether it's professionally, whether it's in the world, in your personal life or whatever. And you start, you know, thinking about what's going to be different in 2014. And I know I would assume most everybody that calls himself a turdite, probably feels the same way. They can't believe that after the events leading up, you know, you mentioned beginning in 1999, leading all the way through 2007, they can't believe that somehow through mope and spin and baling wire and chewing gum and everything else and deception that the powers that be have been able to maintain yesterday's monetary system, yesterday's paradigm, as long as they have, because it's all now just kind of an empty shell. It's like a Hollywood movie lot, you know? Now, it's easy to sit there and say, and I know I felt this way. I remember in like 2009 thinking, you know, this has got to be it. I mean, how can they keep it going all the way through 2010? But now, you know, and then they did. But this year, I really feel, especially with this gold stuff, as just one symptom. I really have this kind of – I can't give it a more – a better definition or a better description than just simply a gut feeling. But I feel like 2014 really is finally going to be a year of consequence. Now, with that as this kind of long introduction to what I want you to address next, you haven't been crying that the sky is falling like I have for 4 or 5 years. You've been very patient and diligent, saying – yeah, they might hold it together a little bit longer here, but I think I even sense from your latest writings that you're thinking 2014 might be a year of consequence as well. Is that right?
It certainly is. It's funny. My first real important end of the year declaration, and more like an epiphany, was the end of 07, because in early 07, I was talking about how the mortgages were going to break. And I didn't really know much about subprimes, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, who did?
Yeah, but then I started realizing, oh, subprime, that's just a low-quality mortgage bond. Okay, it's from a less credited, qualified buyer. Okay, fine. But at the end of 07, I wrote a back-to-back pair of articles in – the last week of December, I titled it something like the year 2007, the year things broke. And then the next week I said 2008, the year the system breaks down. And I had my biggest single day of subscription orders. It was almost 30 orders on a single day. And I thought something was wrong with the system. I thought it was repeating the same orders until I realized, no, these are different names, different order numbers. So, oh, gosh, this is going to be a big week. And it was. It was the biggest week ever. Every end of year since then, I've been evaluating the same thing. Should I write an article at the end of 08? This is the year things broke, and 2009 is the year the whole system completely fractures and the dollar goes away. No. The voice gave me a hint at the end of 08 that 09 would not be a system breakdown case where everything broke. It would be a year where it spread to Europe and they use extraordinary measures to hold it together. So I went through the same decision at the end of 09, and I thought, oh, gosh, 09, sooner or later they're going to have QE Japan-like stuff. What happened a year later? I didn't think it was going to break down. It's not going to break down until QE arrives and then QE fails. Now we're starting to see that QE is failing.
Right.
I mean, gosh, what are some of the big things that are going to happen next year? Well, quantitative easing, which I like to call basic Weimar hyper-monetary inflation,
yes.
It's going to be celebrated, begged for, required. It's the train going over the cliff. There are no alternatives. Okay, what's another real big event? Well, the U.S. is losing the entire Middle East. What on earth were they doing in Egypt propping up Morsi, a puppet?
Yeah.
This Arab Spring is designed for the United States to lose the Middle East. What on earth were we doing in Syria with our proxy, the Saudis, jeez, dispensing the chemical gas? And then the obedient Western press blaming it, yeah, on the Syrian loyalists behind Assad. And it was the Saudis who bought
– That whole story just disappears. I mean, we're on the verge of what could have been an uncontrollable war – and then it just disappeared.
Well, that's what happens when the tiger has his tail between his legs and he starts crawling away. He didn't even run away. He crawled away.
Yeah, yeah. So he's driving them all in. Yes. And so we were alienating everybody there. You're right. Keep going. Okay. I didn't mean keep going.
All right. Now we got reports that the Saudis want the U.S. embassies shut down on Saudi soil. And I'm seeing stories about how the Saudis are behaving a bit like financial terrorists in their dollar posturing. And that's why I said what I said about Iran. Iran is going to take on the role of being kind of the linchpin in the Persian Gulf. You watch it unfold. It will be amazing. All right, what are some of the other ones? I mentioned the NatGas co-op eclipsing the OPEC and helping to provide the skeletal structure behind the petro yuan, which will be aided in no small part by the Shanghai crude oil futures contract denominated in Chinese yuan.
Yep.
Well, what are some of the other things going on? Look at the warehouse purchases and acquisitions that are going on in Manhattan and New York City. I just read that Russia's Rosneft, which is their biggest oil company, and by the way, is twice the size of ExxonMobil, Rosneft is buying Morgan Stanley's energy offices. So who do you think is going to be controlling the crude oil price? It's going to be the new giant marginal excess capacity producer called Russia. We're going to see a big phase out in the next year of Saudi Arabia. And then what's another real big event? It's this reset. Oh, I got some stories to tell you about the reset. I mean, I could go on for an hour on the reset. Some clowns think it has to do with the Iraqi dinar. I mean, they've got to be some of the dumbest investors.
That doesn't make any sense in the world.
Okay. Here are a couple of hints. I'm going off the cuff here without notes, but see if I get this right. I was told that the reset is going to be about the dollar devaluation.
Okay, sure.
So with my excellent source with impeccable past record, I asked, I can't see the euro going to 250. So what exactly is the dollar going to devalue against? And he said, no, the euro is going to be damaged too. Okay, that's a terse response. So I wrote back, I'm not giving up. I'm a jackass. I am like a terrier dog. I had a bone put in my mouth and I wasn't letting go. And I said, I can't see the yen going to 200 or the franc doubling or the British pound going to 300. And he said, no, all the major currencies are going to be devalued. Another terse response. So I'm thinking, okay, I think I get it. It's not really the dollar devaluation. It's the fiat major currency devaluations, and they're all going to get dropped by half against gold. And if you turn your perspective around, what you see is gold is going to be revalued double the price in all major currencies. And I said, did I get that right, mein Herr? And that's what I heard, silence. So that I've come to learn is his way of saying, yeah, you got it right, and I'd rather not talk about it.
Yeah.
Okay, what else is this about? Because then he followed up and said, no, the dollar has been singled out for special treatment. It's going to be devalued. And I said, you mean devalued versus the other currencies? Because they're all going to be devalued versus gold. And it sounds like they're, you know, we're hearing about a 5% band to be enforced among all the major currencies. Well, it's a bunch of bullshit. That might be the case, except for the new dollar. Okay. He said the dollar's going to be devaluated heavily and probably in a sequence of steps versus the major currencies. And I said, well, here's my take on it, sir. I think they're going to split the dollar, a foreign dollar, which is the one we've got now. That you can't tell Panama, Singapore, Hong Kong, and Switzerland that you've got a bunch of dollar accounts and we're going to lay something on you with a big devaluation, or we're going to call them home, or we're going to enforce some new rules with a global jurisdiction that we don't have. No, what they're going to do is they're going to create a new dollar. I've heard the name Republic Dollar. I've talked about it before.
Yeah, I've heard. Yeah, you hear that a lot.
This reset, turd, is going to be the birth pangs of the shit dollar.
Yeah.
It's going to be a new dollar, and they're even talking in this reset about a gold-backed dollar. Well, there might be a gold-backed dollar, but that's going to be the international dollar if it is gold-backed at all. The shit dollar, and I mean S-H-I-T, shit dollar. If you want an example, look at the Venezuelan Bolivar, down 70% in two quick devaluations. We're going to see a new U.S. dollar. It'll be devaluated. The Chinese and the wealthy old families in Asia want a 50% dollar devaluation, and agreements have been made for two different 30% devaluations, just like Venezuela.
And Jim, just for people that that are listening that don't know exactly why that needs to occur or how that would occur. This all goes back to the basically a deflation, right? I mean, the Fed has tried to and they've tried to print money and devalue just to kind of keep things afloat. But it's no longer. I mean, it's kind of that's run its course. There's nothing more that can be done other than if you're going to try to maintain something here specifically in the U.S., other than just simply devaluing by doubling essentially the amount of money that's out there. And that, I mean, I'm trying to put this in to make sure everybody understands why something like this might ultimately take place.
It's very difficult to explain something so complex to people who've had their heads up their asses and their heads in the sand, looking the other way, ignoring it, going about their busy lives, hoping the problem will go away.
Right. But for most folks listening to you and I, that's not who we're talking about.
I know. But I'm going to try because, you know, to be honest, I got about 10% of my client base that comes in saying I recently discovered your work. I've only in the last year or so begun to read more extensively. There are a lot of smart people who are awakening, and I try my best to explain it. But this is really complicated. But let's try to get some simple terms in here.
Okay.
All right. First of all, the Federal Reserve is not the U.S. central bank. The Federal Reserve is the dollar central bank.
Okay. Yeah.
Dollar is a global currency, the global reserve currency, and there are lots of masters out there living in castles around the world, like in London, like in Switzerland, and who knows, maybe even Beijing. I don't really know. And these guys have a lot of power.
Right.
And you call them Illuminati. I get bothered by the name. You can call them whatever you want. They're Knights just, Templar, Illuminati.
They're just bankers. You know, they're just the ones in charge.
Yeah. Okay. But what has happened in the last couple of years that pissed off the rest of the world into taking action? The answer, I believe, is many things. But the lead item was the Federal Reserve started catering to Wall Street, printing extra money. Now they're covering U.S. government debt so it doesn't all crash. And this action has been undermining in a grand debasement process a lot of commodities and foodstuffs.
Right.
Notice that the crude oil price has not kept pace with the money production.
It's gone up.
New money.
It's gone up, but you're right. It has not kept pace.
No, it's not gone up. The money supply has gone up double or two and a half, almost triple.
Right.
And we're talking about $2.5-3 trillion of new money, and the crude oil price is still in the 80 to 110 range. It really hasn't changed. I don't buy for a minute the argument that crude oil is keeping pace with inflation.
No, it hasn't. You're right.
But gasoline price might have a lot more.
Yeah.
Which means that the refiners are getting squeezed. So, all right, now go back to Egypt, because the U.S. public was told exactly nothing true about Egypt. It was basically a food price revolution.
Right.
Okay. What's unique about Arabs? Well, you know, I got a lot of criticism for the Arab culture. I think it's one of the most unsuccessful in all the world. You don't leave your women uneducated and then force your women or leave your women to teach your children until they're 5.
Excellent point.
You just don't do that. The Japanese do the exact opposite. They educate their women and make sure that the wives and whatever you want to call them teach their kids. And that's why the Japanese probably and the Germans are the best students in the world.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Okay, so all these different nations saw food price rises, and the Arabs are distinct. They spend 80% of their income on food to survive. The United States used to spend about 12 to 15, and it's rising because our incomes are falling and the food prices are rising. Now, couple the food price rise worldwide with rising cardboard, rising price for plastic, rising price for copper, rising price for lots and lots of different business input costs. Okay, so the rest of the world is pissed off. Now the rest of the world is saying our banks are going to hell because we got all these treasury bonds that are being undercut now by the Federal Reserve's QE. You can't print money and expect those who save in treasury bonds. You can't print money and use the printed money to monetize treasury bonds and expect those who have their reserves built around treasury bonds to just sit back and get cratered.
Exactly.
So they're not sitting back. They've come up with Russia and China as the lead dogs. They've come up with this gold trade settlement movement. They're using the BRICS as their train and the G20 as their forum to come about a new gold trade settlement system that's not based on banks and not based on currency. They're bringing about a new gold trade standard outside the Forex, outside the banks, outside the SWIFT code weapon that got abused by the U.S. versus European banks mm-hmm. for dealing with Iran.
Right.
So all these Iran sanctions brought about a flashpoint of the Eastern nations led by Russia and China to bring about an alternative. And they bloody well brought about an alternative to the point that the U.S. says, we surrender the petrodollar. We surrender and we'll stop the sanctions against Iran. We just want some bullshit piece of paper pronouncement that you're going to base all your sales in dollars and we will have no enforcement behind it because it doesn't mean a damn. Wow.
Yeah.
We got some very big things going on, and the rest of the world, seeing what happened with Iran and the sanctions, decided, well, we need a global peace talk in Geneva. And, you know, when I got word from The Voice about what the agenda was, my jaw hung open.
The talks with Iran, the whole six power or whatever talks with Iran, that's what you're talking about?
Yeah, the UN Security
right.
Five plus,
okay.
plus what, Germany.
What did he say?
He said it's about nuclear proliferation and the right to bomb each other for abandoning the dollar.
Explain that a little further.
Well, any nation that decides we're going to abandon the dollar on our trade settlement, like, say, Saddam Hussein, mm-hmm. who had about 2 years' worth of euro sales, and he boasted about it, and then he built up a nuclear arsenal and chemical weapons and lots of delivery systems. And then suddenly the U.S. attacks Iraq, and we talk about weapons of mass destruction. And then we did two things that were both full of lies. We claimed that we discovered a huge supply of yellow-painted wooden bricks posing as gold bars at the Iraq Central Bank. That was one lie, because they were real. We stole their central bank.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We stole it. Now, the second lie was we claimed we never found the weapons of mass destruction. Well, I met Brian in the summer of 2009 and here in Costa Rica. And we were talking about a marketing project for my work. And I said, well, Brian, what's your background? And he said, oh, I just spent 2 years in Iraq a little while ago working for Halliburton. And I said, huh?
Really?
And I said, well, you must be full of stories. He said, oh, yeah. Oh, if the world only knew. And I said, were you working alone or with groups or how'd that work? And he said, oh, we had teams. I said, what was your assignment? He said, go find the chemical weapons. And we found a couple warehouses. I said, how many warehouses full of chemical weapons were found? And he said, 10, 11, maybe 12. And I said, what happened to them all? They all got taken back to the United States? And he said, yeah, they're all made in the United States, sold by Bush. I said, okay, so we never found the weapons of mass destruction, but we really did, and they're all made in America. So instead we came up with a lie that we never found it, because it'd be pretty hard to sell the story that we found the weapons of mass destruction and they all had made in U.S. labels on them. He said, exactly.
I would add, this is completely independent of what you are saying. I had a couple of military guys tell me essentially the same story in a different version. Said that all of the chemical and weapons of mass destruction that were found were marked NATO or had, you know, some other Western marking on them. So anyway, whether it said U.S. well, or NATO or whatever, it just, yeah, exactly, exactly.
Well, you put on top of a Made in U.S. label a sure. NATO.
No, I understand. I mean, I'm not trying to pick at the pepper. The broad story is, they weren't Iraqi made.
Okay, so, you know, this goes back to the point that the principal foundation in defense of the dollar is the U.S. military, and now that is better known than ever.
Right.
You know, it might have been a South Korean military exercise in 2005 when they announced that their central bank wanted to diversify some, not all, away from the treasury bonds. But now it's more like, well, let's put a carrier group out there and let them show their strength.
Yeah.
Okay, it's becoming very well known now. I got one other military story. It's kind of funny. I remember when they supposedly bullshit found Osama bin Laden and bullshit killed him a couple of years ago. I can't tell you how much I laughed to the point of almost tears at the bullshit behind that story.
Right.
And then very conveniently, the entire SEAL squad was shut down.
Yeah, don't even get me started on that.
Okay, right. Well, first of all, there are rules that the teams don't always stick together because they don't want them all to get shut down together.
Right.
Kind of like the president and the vice president. You don't see that stuff.
Right.
Anyway, well, there's another side to the story. Then we heard that Osama's body had so much damage that they decided to bury it at sea, which is totally against Muslim culture. They do such things.
Off the Carl Vinson.
All I could think, go ahead.
It was off the Carl Vinson or whatever that was, the aircraft carrier.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And I said to my informed sources, well, you know, when you've got freezer burns for putting the body inside a freezer, you can get rid of some of the damage by burying them at sea.
Like Ted Williams' head.
Well, it gets there's more. I'm leading up to a climax. I've got a client who's got military experience, U.S. military experience. I have several, and they're full of stories. I honestly, when they contact me, I hold my breath and, oh, gosh.
Yeah, no. What's it going to be this time?
Oh, this is going to be nasty. This is going to bother me. This is going to keep me up from sleeping properly.
Right.
Okay, well, this guy said, Jim, I've got a really good buddy who's on that Vincent.
Yeah.
And he tells me that weekend when they supposedly buried Osama at sea and the body came on board, he said, if that was the case, how come nobody on the ship was aware? So it was a totally fabricated story.
Right.
And okay, back up a little bit to my friend Ahmad. I don't have very many Arab friends from my days, but I met this Pakistani at a job, one of my last jobs. Smart guy, database systems, you know, Microsoft Access, but also some of the other better database products that he was good at. He was my database guy on projects that we worked on together. I'd do the statistical methods. I'd come up with the algorithms, and I'd come up with the formulas, and then he would try to implement them in the databases and get the relational database stuff working this and that way. Ahmad was perfectly bilingual. I mean, he had slang down. He was educated in the United States. He had a master's in business. He had a little statistics. I liked having lunch with Ahmad. He was a good guy. We never got into religious differences and things. And one time I was in his office to review something on our project, and I said, what you got there? And he said, oh, it's just Karachi news. I said, you read all that, huh? And he said, oh, yeah, it's my native language. It's Urdu. And I said, what's the difference between Urdu and Arabic? And he said, same alphabet, different accents on the different letters. And I said, okay, so Urdu and Arabic are completely cousins. And he said, yes. It's kind of like English and Spanish. They've got some accents, but it's the same alphabet.
Okay.
And many same sounds. He said, Jim, you know, I spent 5 years in Saudi Arabia. My father was working at an embassy, and I've got many years in Pakistan, Karachi, many years in Saudi. So when the Osama story came out, I was on it. And I said, what'd you learn, Ahmad? Tell me. Just lay it on me. And he said, very interesting things, all of them contradictory. But he said, a turning point happened in 05. In 05, we no longer got the Al Jazeera videos that were exposés and Osama bitching about something critical of this and that.
Right.
Instead, in 05, it switched. It came to a website. And he said, Jim, we all know Langley and the U.S. government boys with their propaganda crap, they all rely very heavily on websites. So, I don't know if any of you people realize, but Osama was not internet savvy. He was not this guy who had a website operating out of an Afghan cave. I said, yeah, I know. That's for the moron Americans. He said, yeah. I said, unfortunately, there are quite a lot of them, and I encounter them all the time. It's very upsetting. I said, what's the second thing? Because you said there were two. He said, yeah, there was a second thing. It happened a couple months later. The message changed. He said, until 05, the message was Shiites and Sunnis are both Muslim brothers, and we should never attack each other. We should realize that we have a common enemy in the West. The Americans, the British, whatever, the warlords, all these people who try to control our lives from the West, the bankers. And he said, after the 05 incident, after it went online and no longer Al Jazeera, the big change was Sunnis, go and kill your Shiites. They are your blood enemies. They are raping your daughters. And I said, You really follow all this that closely? He said, Jim, the message changed overnight. And that is in shortly after, not immediately after, but like a year later. He said, Jim, they used year-old tapes at Al Jazeera. And I said, what did you learn from your Karachi news and your friends in Karachi that you keep in touch with by email? And he said, I got a few friends in Karachi. They speak English, and English is not rare over there. What happened was, he died of kidney failure, and they had a national week of mourning in Pakistan. It didn't even make the news in the West. And I said, what happened to his body? And he said, I don't really know. So they had this national day of mourning. They had big parades in Karachi and all across Pakistan, including Islamabad, the capital. I mean, it's a big country. Pakistan is not small.
Right. Right.
If I had to guess, I think it's like 120. It's got more people than Mexico.
Yeah.
All right. So all these things are going on. This is going to be a very weird year, yeah. Turd. And, you know, very destructive. I think we're gonna see Saudi Arabia turn into an actual U.S. enemy.
Headed that way.
And the U.S. population is going to be bewildered. I thought you told us Iran was the enemy. And now they're going to be holding things together. And, oh, we're going to have, like, state-level meetings. I think a big compromise was struck. Get rid of this Ahmadinejad and put in someone new who's more progressive and just less virulent, right. Less seems bombastic.
Seems like somebody we can deal with.
Yeah. And I think that's going to happen. I got to tell you one other brief story. I used to go skiing in western Maine. There's a place called Sunday River, and we loved it because the New Yorkers didn't go there.
Right.
New York skiers are absolutely the worst. I've almost been killed twice by New York skiers. So we go farther north where they don't reach because they ski drunk. And they and it sounds funny. It's not.
No, I've done that myself.
When you're going along at 20, 25 miles right. an hour skiing, and some moron just got out of his lunch where he had a few beers, and right. he knocks you flat on your keister,
right.
and your neck is hurting, you realize you might have broken your neck by this stupid New Yorker.
Right, right.
So we as a habit in Boston for 20 years – let's go where the New Yorkers are not. And that means stay away from southern Vermont. Stay away from what's the word? Stratton.
Right.
Stay away from Killington. Stay away from Pico. Stay away from even Wildcat in New Hampshire. Go north, young man. So we went to Sunday River, Maine. Anyway, I met this guy there. it's the only time I've ever met an Iranian skiing.
Okay.
He was a gentle fellow, you know, not very big, like 5'8", 150 pounds. And I can't remember his name. I said, how long have you been skiing? And he said, oh, I just took it up 3 years ago. I'm not very good. I'd like you to meet my wife. She's not really in love with me because it's an arranged marriage, but she's a very lovely girl. And I said, where do you work? And he said, I work in Cambridge, you know, Boston, Cambridge, Twin
Cities.
I work in Cambridge. I'm a biochemical engineer. And I said, well, we'll have to sit by the fireside. This is how I learn things. Let's sit by the fireside, and you'll have to tell me about all these bacteria-producing enzymes that are going to cure diabetes and whatever. And he said, oh, they're very real. I'm working on a couple now. And later that day, we had another fireside discussion because everybody skis cold, and you come back, your feet are – you deal with an hour of frozen feet sometimes in upper
North
New England. In Colorado and Utah, you don't have that. You're not frozen foot. But anyway, this guy, I can't remember his name. I think it was Ali. Anyway, this Ali guy said to me.
Uh-oh, hold on, Jim.
Full of good people. And I said, yeah, full of good people. Go on, tell me more. And he said, well, 90% of the public, the population in Iran want to get rid of the mullahs. They're harming our country. They're stealing our oil revenue. They've got banks, Swiss banks, in secret. They have all these rules. We would like some freedom like the rest of the world. And I said, well, gosh, why don't you get that word out to the Western press? And he said, well, we try, but the Western press doesn't want to hear anything. They prefer to hear our anti-Israel news.
Right.
I said, well, don't you have this arch enemy attitude toward Israel? He said, that's our leaders just trying to get elected, but it's not the people. And I said, your people are not anti-Semitic? He said, no, well, some are, but you know, not really. We're just Muslims, but we're Shiite Muslims. We have different beliefs. I said, well, aren't you guys big on suicide bombing and crap like that? And he said, no, there's some wild-eyed Shiites who are violent, but aren't there some wild-eyed Christians too who are violent? I said, well, yeah, I guess there are, you know, kill for God and country. He said, well, it's not really a whole lot different in Iran, but, you know, someday you'll realize, it might take 10 more years, but someday you realize that Iran is not the enemy. We're full of good people, we're full of smart people, and we use the internet a lot. And we've got a lot of scientists, and, you know, I came to this country to work as a biochemist, and, you know, things are working well. I'm making really good money, and now I've got myself a wife, and, well, you know, Jim, I think I'll be lucky to keep her. We kept in touch by email for the next 6 months, and he lost his wife. she found some guy that she really loves. She used it to get out of Iran, come to the United States, got divorced, and found someone she really cared about. I asked him, how's your skiing? He said, it's still pretty bad.
Jim, I want to – hold on just a second. I had never – maybe this is not an original thought. This may be a path you've been down plenty of times. I'd never had really thought of it this way until just now. Are the – we had the Ayatollah Khomeini in 1980, 79, whatever it was, comes back, displaces the Shah, and now they have been – boogeymen for 33 years, allowing, you know, allowing Iran to be painted in the West as being this, you know, this horrible place, you know, evil, you know, great Satan and all that kind of jazz. And the Saudis to be portrayed as, you know, our friends, you know, our big oil producers, recycling the petrodollars, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And then you look at it now, you know, even in whatever year that was, 2009, there was the big, let's call it a democratic protest movement. You know, you get this now in 2011, in the Arab Spring, like you talked about, nonsense. But it happened in Iran in 2009, and Obama did nothing to support that and promote it. And I'm looking at that now through this lens of what you just talked about as, is it because we had to keep the boogeymen in place that we need? And, you know, because if the Iranians, if they're allowed to kick out the boogeymen and actually present themselves for what they are, they become what you've said they are going to become, the new Saudi Arabia for the 21st century. You know, the link, petrol link and gas link to China and Russia and this new bloc. I mean, does that all make sense? I mean, I never really had looked at it that way, that the U.S. as part of this interest in maintaining the petrodollar established and maintains the boogeyman.
Well, yeah, we need enemies.
And, right.
You know, when I was in high school, the enemy was Vietnam. And I, you know, I didn't have a really good bullshit meter then. I've got a much more developed bullshit meter. And I talk about this with some of my friends here in Costa Rica. They tell me, Jim, you got one of the best bullshit meters I've ever come across. And that's why I like passing a story by you, because you can say, well, that makes some sense, or, you know, it's just part of the this or that propaganda. The United States painted Vietnam and the Chinese threat, the big yellow scourge, yellow threat, whatever you want to call it. We painted that in the 60s and 70s. And, you know, as I learned more and more and more, I came to realize, gosh, there are a lot of defense contracts in there. And now, golly, it looks like we captured the Cambodian heroin triangle, too. Hmm. Then the movies of Air America with Robert Downey Jr., that was one of his first big movies. That was an amazing little movie, but I'm surprised they allowed it. But, you know, they allow a lot. Now, okay, who's going to be the next big enemy? Yeah. Russia, China.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. We're back to the Cold War.
Yeah.
And this tag team has never been tighter.
And we can't intimidate them with our military that, you know, the way we would a smaller power.
No way. In fact, I got another little story related to me by The Voice. This was, I don't know exactly, I think it was in 2011. The Voice said, Jim, a very big incident took place between China and the U.S. Navy in the Indian Ocean last month. And I said, really? You're sure about this? He said, yeah. He has contacts in security organizations in Britain, in Saudi Arabia, and in Canada, not in the United States. But you don't need the United States if you got Canada and Saudi and Britain, because you can filter out some of the things. Anyway, he said the big incident was that the Chinese put on a display of an electromagnetic pulse weapon. And they basically, really? They fried completely, 100% of a U.S. naval destroyer as an example. And I said, was it alone or in a group? He said, no, not part of a carrier group. It was traveling alone in the ocean, Indian Ocean. And I said, what are they doing with the ship now? Did it sink? And he said, oh, no, it got fried. It's back in Chesapeake, and it's being scrapped. So the Chinese have advanced weapons.
Yeah.
They also have advanced aircraft. They've got stealth aircraft. They've got these catamaran aircraft carriers.
That'd be interesting.
And they're prototype now. But you wait a year or two, they're not going to be prototype. They're going to be sailing faster than the U.S. aircraft carriers because they're catamarans.
Interesting.
Have you ever been on a catamaran?
Oh, sure. I watched the America's Cup this year. They were going twice the speed of the wind.
Well, they're sleek and they're just advanced.
Yeah,
and
right.
It's going to get very dicey. The U.S. public is not properly informed about the level of technology and sophistication of the Chinese military. They've got all kinds of stuff. And they've got some pretty advanced partners to carry out some black bag operations called the Triad. And the Triad is to China what the Mafia is to the United States. China is to the Triad is to China what, in a sense, Langley is to the United States. The Triad does a lot of black bag ops. The Triad was recently invited to come to Costa Rica to keep as a buffer the peace between the Colombian drug lords and the Mexican drug lords. So we're just having lots of fun in Costa Rica. Things are going to change in Central America, I'm afraid.
Well, Jim, I'm sitting here thinking we've been at this for, and anybody that's listening to us has been listening to us for over an hour. and I think have probably enjoyed hearing us just kind of go off in a whole bunch of different directions. It's always fun. But I guess we got to stop someplace.
Let's stop with this story, yeah. Kurt.
I gotta mention. And Jim, wrap in. Okay. What? Just some markers. What, you know? I think we both feel like this is going to be a really year of consequence, I guess, is what, like I called it before. Tell me that story and wrap in, you know, some things that people need to be watching as the calendar flips, and then we'll wrap up.
Okay. We got the story about the LIBOR and the banking scandal.
Yep.
And then we got a lot of other stories, and then came the NSA story.
Right.
About eavesdropping.
You
can call it eavesdropping. To me, indicates I got my ear against the door.
Yeah.
Out who my friend is having an affair with.
Yeah, you're listening to the couple in the hotel room next to you.
This is their activity is much more like 1984, George Orwell,
yeah.
Big Brother, and we want to know how many times you're having sex with that woman.
And blackmail potential stuff.
Blackmail, you name it, other things. Australia got caught with spying on the Japanese during trade talks. This is very, very extensive. Now Europe is complaining that it's not for control of terrorism. It's for stealing corporate secrets for the advantage of the U.S. corporations. Here's what I'm driving at. We're going to get an NSA backlash economically. It's going to isolate the United States far more than their bank fraud. And here's an example. Brazil just canceled a Boeing fighter aircraft contract, Brazil and Boeing, for $4.5 billion. They just canceled it. And they're going to go with a Swedish company called Saab. They make fighter aircraft. And that's the end of, I think, foreign purchases of Boeing weapons.
Interesting. That's now, kind of a blowback.
You bet. And it's not going to stop there. If there's a – oh, here's another example. The Saudis announced that they're making giant military orders for weapons from Russia. And the U.S. didn't say a word.
Yeah.
Why is that? Because the new protector of the Persian Gulf, the protectorate role, which is critical – for the petrodollar, mm-hmm. is now in transition.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be Russia-China.
Yeah.
And you got lots and lots of indications already. And you had the Iran pipeline, Iran-Pakistan pipeline. The U.S. backed off on that. China came in on that and funded it. Now Russia has backed the Shiite pipeline, as I like to call anything coming out of Iran that's going to go to Syria and the Mediterranean. Russia's got a new naval base coming up in Lebanon and in Jordan. No, next year you can be on the lookout for a lot of things. It will be the Deutsche Bank failure that spreads across to the Western banks. I've said this before, that since the Lehman Brothers breakdown, all the big major Western banks have tied themselves together like sailors lashing themselves on the deck of an unstable ship during a storm.
Uh-huh.
All these Western banks are tied together. So when one goes, they're all going to go.
Yeah.
Deutsche Bank's going to go. It's going to go down. It's going to go down hard. And there's nothing stopping it. BaFin is all over it. BaFin is their watchdog prosecutor type. In Germany, they're all over their fraud. So watch for a big blow up in Germany over Deutsche Bank, which was in collusion with numerous different European countries to conceal by accounting fraud their total debt for Maastricht requirements regarding the European Monetary Union. That's a pretty big violation.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
That's going to spread to the Western banks. Look also for, as I talked about before, Iran to be painted as the peacemaker, the coordinator, the linchpin of the Persian Gulf. Look for Saudis on the back end of that fart to become the terrorists who are now anti-dollar, and how dare you sell those treasury bonds? How dare you dump that Citibank stock? Okay. Another thing to look for is just complete flip in Wall Street toward, I don't even know what to call it, China domination. They're buying up the warehouses. They bought up J.P. Morgan headquarters. Now Rosneft is buying up Morgan Stanley's energy business offices. Look for China and Russia to begin controlling through their Wall Street puppet offices the energy and commodity market. Look for the Bakken oil range next year and the shale energy project to go belly up and be revealed as bullshit.
That'd be interesting, yeah.
That's a big Obama private investment, just like green energy.
Yeah.
Okay, word I got regarding shale and fracturing and all that stuff is that you need a significant hyperbolic growth of the number of wellheads drilled in order to compensate for the 30, 40, 50% depletion each year. And you run out of places to drill oil.
Sure, yeah.
Not only that, but when you start fracturing the table,
you
start polluting the water systems. And I've seen about five shows in just the last month of farmers complaining that they can light their water pools on
fire. Right.
Okay, so how's that strategy working out, Obama?
Yeah.
Now, there are a lot of things to look for. I think we're also going to see it's going to be like the virtual end of the COMEX. I've been saying now for 3 years, the price suppression will continue until the COMEX and JP Morgan no longer have any more gold. I'm not talking about paper contracts, as they can produce an infinite number of them. But their inventory is going down. The GLD is the last ditch to raid and rape and pillage. It's down about 40% from peak less than a year ago.
Just this year, calendar year, it's down enough.
40%. Yeah. I think last November was its peak, and it stayed level for about 4 months, about 1,450 tons, and now it's 800-something, 850, 870, I don't know exact number.
814.
Wow, okay. So look for the COMEX to go through a technical default where they announced. I mean, you can go back. You know this much better than I do, but they haven't made good on any private deliveries in about 4, 5, 6 months.
Right.
And you got the inventory levels going way down. Now you got J.P. Morgan replenishing, so – where are all the contract holders who were denied the delivery of their gold and silver? Where are they? Did they not file a lawsuit? No, my guess is that they did not want to be blackballed from Wall Street altogether, and some of them didn't want to have their little girls murdered.
you keep quiet now. Yeah, no, I hear you. I can imagine. Those are all the strong-arm tactics that would be taking place.
All right, so look for next year. We're going to see a technical default, and it won't be a shutdown of COMEX. It'll be a recognized shutdown that, in the sense that, if you want to buy gold, you don't go to the COMEX.
No, it's no longer a delivery mechanism. Yeah.
No longer a delivery mechanism. And Jim Sinclair calls it the emancipation of physical gold from the COMEX and its paper factory. And that's a lovely term, emancipation of physical gold.
Yeah.
And we're going to see the emancipation this year, I think, coming year. 2014.
Everything seems to be pointing that direction. I mean, whether you talk about the GLD or at the beginning of this year also, there were 3 million ounces of registered gold in those vaults, and yesterday it fell under 500,000. I mean, that's, what is that, 82%, 83% down? And there's just nothing left.
Another thing to look for next year is the widespread acceptance of QE to infinity.
Mm-hmm.
The taper talk will be stopped because the taper talk will be recognized as a lie.
Right.
The Fed has a major challenge ahead to lie better about a tapering while in the background they continue their $150 to $250 billion per month.
Agreed. All you have to do is look at not only what they state, kind of like Chinese gold imports. You know, you take the number and then double it or whatever. But you just look at the actual data. Remember that chart from a couple of months ago about off of the tick data that showed that everybody was a net seller of treasuries except the one net buyer, you know, who wasn't listed and on the chart from Zero Hedge said mystery buyer X. Who could this be, I wonder? And even at their stated, as you said, it's more than that, even at their stated number of how much bonds they're buying, all through 2013, the long bond went from 2.8 to 3.9, right? So they've lost control, Jim.
No, I think that when they did the taper talk, it was partially done on order by China to break things, to cause the shut, which was an actual break, actual default. I think we had a debt default 2 months ago, 3 months ago, but it's much bigger than that. I think something extremely big is going on. I think the default is in progress. I think China is moving in charge. They're taking over Wall Street, and I can't express in words how tumultuous I think 2014 is going to be.
Yep. All right, my friend. I think right there would be a perfectly fine place to stop for now. Why don't we let this settle for, I don't know, a month or so, 6 weeks? Let's see what develops and then get back to, well, hell's bells. Why don't we get back together around Valentine's Day or President's Day? That would be about 6 weeks into the new year, if not before then.
Okay.
And let's just see how things have already begun to shake out and how all of this stuff, you know, how much change has already taken place. Because I'm with you. This is going to be we're really finally very, very close to the end. I've been wrong on this, you know, and I've stated countless times that the biggest thing I've learned is not to underestimate the power of these forces to keep things going. But whether it's what we see in gold, whether what you've described all about the stuff with China and the yuan facilities and everything that's going on in the Middle East, all of this is finally reaching the end, is it not? I mean, it really seems like we're close.
It does. And you can see some real big indications by the tilt change in news stories. And once in a while I see a story and go, wow, why did they let that go out?
Yeah.
And you know, a recent one was painting the Saudis as villains in the New York Times.
Yeah.
Well, what's that all about? Okay.
Yeah.
They're getting ready to paint the Saudis as the new anti-dollar terrorists because they're going to flip and assist Iran in being, you know, architects of the petro-yuan. Anyway, all right. Well, it's great being on. And
Jim, just tell everybody again, goldenjackass.com.
GoldenJackass.com, www.GoldenJackass.com. We're approaching the 10-year anniversary next April, May. And we got two reports, the Money War Report and the Gold and Silver Report. They're very different. One focuses on the dollar. The other one focuses on gold. We're having a lot of fun here, but honestly, getting tired. I'd like a little more satisfaction, honestly.
It's serious business, though, and it you've just got to keep going because if it's tiring and everything else, there's not much we can do. You and I have chosen our path, and we have to keep trudging forward.
Oh, I'm going to continue until the return of the gold standard plus a couple of years, but next year is the year of the recognized paradigm shift.
I agree with you, my friend. Well, we shall see. Enjoy your Christmas. Happy Ramahana Kwanzmas, all that stuff. And
I'm a Christian. I go with Christmas. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you for spending all of this extended time. Have a great Christmas season. Happy New Year. Happy New Year. And we'll see where we go from here, my friend.
May you have a tumultuous New Year, too. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.